is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
It is just that at 8 o'clock right here on 98.7 ESPN. It's pretty clear to me that, as I told you a few weeks ago, Adam Gase was trying to get fired. This team is trying to get fired. The Jets have quit. That's what it looks like, and it's pretty obvious to me. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Carlin with you until 10 o'clock tonight. Very excited to be with you. So much to discuss, not just the fact that it appears that the Jets have quit, but also that Sam Darnold is in a very interesting spot right now, especially with the trade deadline tomorrow. We will also get into the New York Mets, Marcus Stroman, and the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and Andy Martino, which all ties together. We will tell you about that in a little bit as well. But we begin on the phones in moments at 800-919-3776. Lines are open. I have to tell you, I don't know what I'm doing with my free time. You work at your job, and you work at a job like this, and let's be honest, it's not a job. It's playing in the sandbox of life. So I'm sitting there this morning, as I normally do, and rewatching the Jets game or the Giants game, whichever it would be, and rewatching the Jets game. And by about the middle of the second quarter, I just looked at myself kind of in the phone as I was looking away and, you know, looking at pictures, and I accidentally hit the camera button. It looks at me. I'm like looking at myself, what are you doing? What are you doing? Why are you watching this again? Because you watch it again, and it looks like the guys who are playing aren't even that interested in watching it. Now, look, I understand that hanging the quit word is tough on a team. When I say the Jets have quit, here's what I mean. They come into the game with the best of intentions, but you look at a game like yesterday, and they know who they are playing, and they know when they are trading field goals for touchdowns, that they're dead in the water. Dead in the water. And they know that when you're not even paying attention, if you're Pierre Desir, and you are facing the Kansas City Chiefs with Andy Reid, who have the football on a 4th-and-4 at midfield, and you're already halfway down the field running to cover a punt, when it's so obvious going to be a fake punt, you know that you've mentally quit in the moment. What I mean by that is you're just not focusing. You're just not thinking. You're just not paying attention to what's going on. You're looking at the Jets trying to set up defensively for what the Chiefs are doing. What the Chiefs are doing is nothing new. What the Chiefs are doing is what they have done for the last couple of years under Andy Reid with Patrick Mahomes and all the speed they have. And I'm not denying the talent that is on the Kansas City Chiefs. What I will point out, though, is that the Jets looked completely out of position, completely uncoached in some spots, taking bad angles to try to tackle guys. I mean, Tyreek Hill is streaking down the field wide open. Ashton Davis, a rookie, gets just torched on a double move. Didn't even look like he'd ever seen it in his life. Mecole Hardman on a jet sweep that's called a touchdown pass, which is a joke to begin with. Not a play that the Chiefs haven't run 150 times in the last year and a half. And the Jets look shocked, absolutely stunned. There is no getting around that this is a poorly coached football team on both sides of the ball. Please listen to the head coach after the game yesterday and try to really listen to the tone of his words and what he's exactly saying.
I mean, it's obviously not where we wanted to be. I'm just like everybody else in the aspect of I'm doing this job to win, not to have to go out there and, you know, get my face stomped in, just like all the rest of these guys in the locker room. So, but we'll go back to work on Monday. We'll get things corrected. And then when we start practice again, I expect that same energy. And that's what I've seen week in and week out for the last 2 years, is guys coming to work and trying to find a way to flip things. You know, we're going to have, you know, a division opponent next, and we got to prepare the right way. And we know what kind of matchup we're going to have.
You know, the lament of losers is talking about how they see the energy in practice every week, and it just doesn't translate on Sunday. These guys get it in their heads so quickly, so early in the game, that they are completely shot. And I know that we're not saying anything terribly new when it comes to the Jets, but when you hear a head coach talk about getting his face stomped in, and by the way, sounded like he's in witness protection and giving an interview on 60 Minutes with the tone of it. I don't know what was going on with the Zoom call, but nonetheless, it's just, frankly, so painful to watch. And when you hear a coach say, we're not here to get our faces stomped in, what does that even mean? Because that team that went out on the field yesterday, even though they're facing the best team in the NFL, did not look like a team that was even prepared for what was coming. They know, we know, about the incredible speed that they have, but don't make it even easier for them. That was easier than some practices that the Chiefs have. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that. Easier than practice. And then Sam Darnold, I hear him today. And I hear him on with Michael. And, you know, I feel for him in one way, because We all understand what is and isn't around him. But there are decisions that are made that he makes that are head-scratchers. I just don't see it. And every week I hear the same thing. He's taking the hit for the team publicly. What player has stood up in that room and said, enough? What player has respected the coach enough to stand up and say, can we not get our asses kicked today? Is that possible? Who's backing him up? Is this just simply about ensuring the number one pick? Because, okay, I get it. I get it. Okay? That's fine. But when you hear the same answers week after week, and you see the same results week after week, and they're... it's primarily because there may not be enough talent there, but that can't be the excuse for being poorly coached. And the Jets are a poorly coached team that don't believe in their coach and that have quit on him. And when I say quit, I'm not saying they're just standing around doing nothing. I'm saying they're not mentally focused. There doesn't seem to be any accountability on the line for them. They don't play with an urgency. When things get bad, they don't put bad plays behind them. That's quitting. That's quitting. And it's a tough moniker to hang on to somebody, but that's what's going on right now. Adam Gase, I fully believe, weeks ago was trying to get out of here. And he knows exactly what he's been up against, and he knows exactly what the landscape is. And now you have a team that, you know, is able to do some things in the first half offensively, and then they have 40 yards and two first downs in the second half. It's brutal. There's no mental focus. There are mistakes that are made that are just mind-boggling. Let's talk about Darnold for a second. I know the guys earlier today were talking about the possibility of Sam getting traded before the deadline, and that's not happening, especially, you know, he had the injury. That's number one. And the MRI came back pretty good, but still, you're not going to be making the trade for him now. But the bigger issue here is what people believe that you're actually going to get in return for Sam Darnold right now. And to me, I think a second rounder is asking for a lot. And I get it. Folks, we can talk all you want about what he hasn't had, but Sam hasn't played well to think that he would absolutely have a chance to get that kind of a return. I went to Pro Football Focus this afternoon, okay? And I'm going to illustrate your point before I illustrate mine. The guards on the Jets are ranked 26th and 31st for how they played this year. Connor McGovern at center is ranked 34th. There are 32 teams in the league, and he's ranked 34th. I'm not exaggerating. Edoga, who has filled in, is the highest-rated Jet tackle at 24. Fant and Becton. Becton's 47, Fant's 52. Okay. But Sam Darnold is ranked as the 33rd best quarterback in the league this year. And again, I would point out that there are 32 teams. And that takes into account a lot of factors. And for Sam, that's not a good sign. There are sacks that are taken that can't be taken. There are throws that are made that can't be made. There are decisions that are made that just absolutely cannot be made. It's painful sometimes to watch this. And I think if your other teams evaluating this going into the offseason, let's say you're a team like the San Francisco 49ers, and you're going to be quarterback shopping after this season because Garoppolo getting hurt is now a thing that's now always a possibility, and frankly, just not being good enough. So let's say you were thinking about, well, maybe we should trade for Sam Darnold, considering what we have here for him to work with. Interesting idea, sure. Are the 49ers giving up a second-round pick for Sam Darnold? As the 33rd best quarterback in a 32-team league, and he's going into his fourth year? I don't know about that. Maybe it's a third-round pick. Maybe you just need to be a little bit more... realistic about what you're going to get in return, don't you? Just have a little bit more of a concept that Sam is not going to go for a second-round pick. I think you're expecting an awful lot if you think you're going to get that. And folks, when it comes to Sam, I don't know really what else there is to look for or to see. I don't know that there's anything left to see. I think we've seen it. It may not be fair, but life in the NFL isn't fair. Life in the world isn't fair, as we know. But life in the NFL isn't fair. Maybe he goes somewhere else and is great. But the Jets aren't going to do anything until they know that Trevor Lawrence wants to be a Jet. And until they know that they have the number one overall pick. So just start adapting for that now. 800-919-3776. Gary is in New Jersey, and he is up next. Gary, what's cooking, brother?
What's up, Chris? How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good, bro. What do you got?
All right, I got two quick comments and then a question.
Sure.
First, you know, as a diehard Jets fan, you know, all the people that are still staying on the bandwagon, that are still supporting the team, I appreciate them. But I have problems with some of these other people.
I do have to say one thing. There were a couple of Jet fans at the game yesterday, and God bless them. They showed them in the stands in Kansas City.
Well, that's good. That means that, you know, not all is completely lost. as far as Sam goes, I have to look at, like, the Adam Gase effect right now. Because if you look at somebody like, for example, Ryan Tannehill, all right, if you were to compare Ryan Tannehill coming out of Texas A&M and being the Dolphins starter under Adam Gase and what he's doing right now, you've got to look at the fact that, yes, I know Sam Darnold's making all these mistakes and his weapons are not that good and the interior offensive line is terrible, but not trying to find hope in the midst of all the darkness, but I got to wonder that, you know, if Sam Darnold's out of New York in a better situation, like, for example, my friends I've talked to, and they ask me about Sam Darnold and the Jets or whatever. They always say that, you know, I always tell them that, hey, I think the Colts would be a good landing spot because nothing against Phillip Rivers. He's still a good quarterback and everything like that.
But no, but we're on the back end here. It's over.
Correct. Yeah. The man can't move. So if Sam Darnold's behind that offensive line with that running game, Frank Reich is his head coach who's been great with quarterbacks, and even those offensive weapons he has on the perimeter and in the slot, I'm not going to say he's going to be the second coming of Joe Montana or even Joe Namath, but he's going to have a much better time. You'd have a better evaluation of him. My second point is that I disagreed with Muhammad from Brooklyn, and I agree with you totally. Pierre Desir, you're a starting corner in the NFL, all right? There's no excuse for that. Fake punt, midfield. Midfield, usually most teams are punting, all right? That, to me, is not only bad coaching, but players not properly watching film, not only of the other team, but themselves. If you're watching film and you see that, okay, this is what I'm doing all the time on punt returns and everything like that, the other teams that you're playing, they see that too. Bill Belichick is a master at figuring out, okay, these are not only your strengths, but I'm going to turn your strengths into weaknesses of what you do. You want to sit up here and turn your back and always worry about the gunner? Then fine. I'm going to call a 10-yard hit.
They knew that was happening. They knew that was happening. And what's mind-boggling to me, and thanks to the call, Gary, is that your Pierre Desir, who has been, a bad signing for Joe Douglas. I don't think he's been very good at all. But your Pierre Desir, and you're not thinking about what the situation is, that it's fourth down and four at midfield with the Kansas City Chiefs, with Andy Reid, who risks it all the time. And you're worried about getting back and covering the punt that quick. Like, you're not even looking that it's possible. Terrible. Absolutely terrible. Raiders, let go. They should be partying right now. I know that they're 0-8. I get it. They should be partying right now, though, and enjoying every second of what is happening in New England. It's over! It's finally over in New England, and Jet fans right now can't even enjoy that. Can't enjoy that entire situation finally imploding. I mean, they are turning in Boston on Belichick so fast. It's amazing to see. The guy has been the greatest coach in the history of sports, and he's there this morning getting buried on radio. I mean, oh my God. You think about what they've done over the last 20 years. And these people are just destroying him like he's mailing it in. Oh, the New England Patriots are 2-5. This crap is all over with. Think about it. This is 20 years. 20 years, man, that you've had to deal with the Patriots and the garbage that it's continued to be for your organization during that stretch. And it's finally over. They are absolutely imploding. And Belichick is sitting there answering questions this morning and is talking about how they sold out to win Super Bowls and they didn't have any money to pay. I mean, they had to go pay Cam Newton $1 million. And this is where they are. I mean, wow. They actually came pretty close to beating the Bills, and Cam Newton fumbled the football on the drive in at, what, the 20-some yard line or something like that. And that town, you talk about a bunch of front-running frauds up in Boston. Front-running frauds. You're bailing on Belichick because the Golden Boy's gone down to Florida. Wow. That's gutless. And you guys are all worried about what's happening next with the Patriots and when they're going to get back to winning all these championships. Welcome to the real world, losers. Welcome. This is what happens when you don't have the greatest combination of quarterback and coach anymore. You become like everybody else. All you fraud Patriot fans who have never even had a clue of what John Hanna and Steve Grogan look like and what bad football was all about when Dick McPherson was your coach. Now you finally get to see it. And unfortunately for the Jets, or for the fans really, they don't get to enjoy it right now. They should be just sucking every morsel of this pain dry from the New England marrow in that bone and loving every minute of this. Unfortunately, they haven't even been allowed to remember that. So at least allow me to remind you that, yes, it's bad right now. Hopefully you can get the number one pick. But, yeah, it's over up north. Welcome back to reality, you front-running frauds. Richard in Manhattan is next.
Chris, you came so close to calling one of the greatest touchdowns in the history of football. Really? And let me tell you why this was better than the 38 years ago, the Cal Stanford game.
When there was no band on the field.
No, that made it better for them. Yeah. But they were more organized. When they were doing it, if you remember, they were doing it synchronized. Rutgers was totally haphazard. And what was great
when you say synchronized, you can't plan out the entire play.
Oh, no, they looked good when they did it, Cal. That looked pretty good the way they did it. Everybody was like in a row, and it looked like they knew what they were doing. As funny as that sounds. But when you go back and look at that, you know. Anyway, but Rutgers, every time one of the guys received the ball, it looked like a hot potato. Yeah. He looked like he didn't know what to do with it. Let me just give it to somebody else.
Well, you got it into the hands of a couple of offensive linemen, and they handed it off like it was a bomb.
That's right. And it was wonderful. And, you know, you guys on the radio, and I was surprised that Ray was so controlled when I saw the replay at night. I watched it a few times at night on the replays on TV. But Ray was pretty calm about everything. I like when Ray is screaming during the game and all. And I don't listen to Mushnick and all. I think he was way off in his criticism on Ray Lucas. I like to hear a home, especially anybody in a New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area, hometown guys. I love to hear it. So I love to hear Ray when he's here. You and Ray are great together, by the way.
I appreciate that.
Anyway, but I thought
Ray's hysterical.
Oh, I love Ray. And I love
it might have been different, Richard, if the touchdown was to win the game.
It would have been unbelievable. It would have been unbelievable.
Then I would not have gotten a word in.
Oh, man. Well, Ray was questioning it. He didn't think it was going to count either?
No, I think because at that point, the play itself just seems so utterly ridiculous. But remember, it wasn't to win the game. It was to cut it to a one-score game.
I understand, but that was a one-in-a-million shot to score.
It was.
You would have went down in infamy, really, famously. I don't know.
I think that's probably the story, right? That's the story from my life. Is almost.
Chris, did you see the Ram-Miami statistics yesterday?
Yeah,
in all my years in football, I don't ever remember a team out first down 31-8 and out total yardage 471-145. And not only did Miami win, they beat them by 11 points. You know,
they beat them, Richard, without much of a contribution from Tua.
Correct. In spite of Tua. Correct. Yeah. And the game was really never close. The Rams scored a touchdown at the end of the game, but that was it. I mean, they were in control the whole game.
Yep.
But if you looked at the statistics, it was unbelievable.
It was, Richard, and thanks for the call,
pleasure,
brother.
Chris.
Appreciate the kind words, too. That was very nice of you to say. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I look at that Ram game yesterday. For me, two things jump out. Number one, the Dolphins have a great defense. Like, for right now, they have an excellent defense. They really do. Secondly, I look at the Rams, and they're coming off Monday Night Football, and they're going across the country, and I think they've been across the country three or four times now, at least three times already, because they played in Philadelphia, they've played in Buffalo, now they've played in Miami. I got to go look. They might have played another team on the East Coast since, but yeah, they Rams have not had the easiest schedule, and they're still 5-3. Oh, and they played at Washington. That was the other one. So think about that. The Rams, in the first 8 weeks of the year, have had to come to the East Coast four times, and they didn't stay East when they played Philadelphia and Buffalo. I know that for a fact. They didn't do that. I want to spend some time on what I find to be an amusing development. When it comes to the New York Mets. Hey, Steve Cohen on board. The man's tweeting this weekend. He's talking about bringing back Old Timers Day. He's, you know, there's one guy writing a letter about how he got banned from Citi Field because he tweeted something nasty about Jeff Wilpon. And he says, yeah, we'll get that fixed. Don't worry about it because, you know, Steve doesn't love Jeff Wilpon. And, you know, he's all into it. His wife is all into it. She's fresh out of the seven-line army. I mean, you got to love it. If you're a Met fan, you're loving every single minute of that. And what I found was interesting is that today they did extend the qualifying offer of $18.9 million to Marcus Stroman. And we'll get to whether or not that was a good decision in a minute. But this, to me, was hysterical. So, you know, Andy Martino, we've had him on. He's a good friend and an excellent journalist. And so once they extend the offer, Andy just goes ahead and tweets right at Marcus Stroman. As I know personally, Marcus Stroman does read Twitter quite a bit and does choose to respond quite a bit, as he and I have inexplicably gotten into a couple of Twitter tiffs. But at any rate, Stroman, you know, Andy wants to know, are you going to take and accept that $18.9 million offer? So he just tweets it directly at Stro. What's going on? You going to take it? And he just tweets back the gif of Will Smith from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air sitting in the chair, shrugging. And like, you can actually report that. He's like, I don't know, maybe. You can actually report that in today's day and age. Reporting in 2020, GIFs. That was a response from Marcus Stroman. Respect on that front. Respect, Marcus. Because it actually is answering the question. I don't know. Maybe. He's got 10 days to do it. Now, was it worth doing? To me, I don't know. No, it wasn't. Now, he may go and get more money somewhere else. He may turn it down. But he may take it. And that concerns me a bit. I think Marcus Stroman is a classic example of one of those pitchers that everybody has always felt is much better than they actually are. And it's a guy that in a lot of cases pitches just well enough to lose games. Like, you'll look at his numbers, and you'll wonder, is that guy with his ERA in the mid-threes, I think, roughly for his career? And he's, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm going to look it up right now, he's got a losing record. Why is that? You know, is he just on bad teams? I mean, we could talk about, you know, clearly he's not Jacob deGrom, who, by the way, is a finalist for the Cy Young Award. Although probably not going to win it this year. I think we're more likely to see, Trevor Bauer win it this year. But I look at Marcus Stroman's career, right? I apologize. He is over 500. He's 51-47 with a 3.76 ERA. and I look at some of his years, and 2019 when he got traded to the Mets, you know, 3.22 ERA, 10-3 overall, 6-11 with the Blue Jays, 4-2 with the Mets. I feel like he's somebody that has always been portrayed as being better than they actually are. And $19 million for someone that to me is at best a third starter? Third. That's a lot of money. And I know the market's much different now, but look at what's going on around the league, around Major League Baseball. Guys are getting cut non-tendered because teams don't want to pay them. And yet, for Stroman in this instance, you're okay doing it. Now, I get it. It's Steve Cohen. All of a sudden, money doesn't matter. Just throw it all out there. That's not going to be the case. And I just don't think that Stroman's, frankly, all that good. I think he is a slightly above average pitcher who, in a lot of instances, finds ways to lose games. And I don't think the Mets should be wasting their money on Marcus Stroman. $19 million is a heck of a risk to take. And I don't think they're just thinking they're automatically getting the pick, that he's absolutely going to turn it down. I don't think that's the case at all. I think Stroman right now is counting on that $19 million as a likely scenario, not just a worst case one, given what the post-COVID market is going to be, and frankly, still in the middle of COVID market is going to be, and is. I think Stroman's looking at it thinking, wow, okay, $19 million, that's pretty nice to sit back on and take. Probably not going to get more than that. Even if I did, let's say somebody offered me 2 years and $30 million, would I take that? Or would I take 19 this year and then go take my chances next offseason? That's probably what I would do. Because maybe next offseason I can get the $100 million contract. Stroman for $19 million is, that's a waste of money. Stroman for 13, 12, okay, and you might say, who cares? If he comes here and pitches well, that's fine. You know, he could be one of those guys that you end up looking at and saying, man, was it worth it? And I hate to be at the end of the year and be asking that question, especially when you have a new owner coming in, learning his way, all that stuff. If he doesn't care, that's fine. And if you don't care, that's fine. I just don't think Marcus Stroman is a guy that is a centerpiece of a winning baseball team. I really don't. I think he's a little above average pitcher that has generally been on average teams in his career. And being on average teams in his career has allowed him to position himself as better than he actually is. Don't you know I'm still standing better than I ever did? Looking like a true survivor. Feeling like Carlin. A little kid. Calls, let's go. Jim is in West Harrison, and he is next on 98.7 ESPN. Jim, what's going on?
Good evening, Carlin. You make no sense, Carlin, on the Stroman thing.
Yeah.
On the Stroman thing. First of all, why are you worried about the money now? This is not the Wilpons. Second of all, if he doesn't sign with us, we get a draft pick. Mm-hmm. And if he does sign with us, we get it for 1 year, and he has to be incentivized to pitch well to get a bigger contract. How the hell do we lose on that?
Well, if he doesn't pitch well, the incentivization doesn't mean anything. I don't think that Stroman.
Yeah, but, you know,
look at what happened this past year, okay?
He's a number four, number five pitcher. He's not a number.
Yeah, and you're going to pay a number four, number five pitcher $19 million. Just because Steve Cohen is here does not mean they're going to go out and spend $300 million.
Well, okay,
you need to get past that.
I'm sorry. 275. 275. Okay, you're right.
Yeah, no, not 275 either. The, you know,
well,
guys
you don't know that.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident of it. I'm pretty confident of it, that this year, that the Met payroll will not be $275 million this coming year.
But you said 300. I said 275.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, it won't be 275 either. And it won't be 250 either. It won't be this year.
You got me.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. What do you think of Carton coming back?
I think Craig deserves a chance. He's a talented guy. Good for him. You know, he paid his debt to society. Whatever. I think Craig is an incredibly talented guy. And it's not surprising at all that he would get another opportunity. Because when you have that kind of ability, it's like business in general. It's like professional sports. It's like anything. If you have great ability and you can generate ratings, you're going to get chances like that. So...
Just like you, Carlin. Just like you.
What do you mean?
Had many chances.
What many chances have I had?
Stations.
Huh?
Many different radio stations. You've been on ESPN. Mm-hmm. You've been on FAN. That's mm-hmm. good, right?
Well, yeah. Listen, I'm happy to be here. And thanks for the call, Jim. I think that your tone there was being a wise ass, but that's all right. I have been on a few stations. Guess what? Had a lot of success, too. Had success in Philly. Had success when we got submarined at the other place and still put up good ratings in the spot that we did. And, you know, it happens. Got cut loose because of some financial concerns. But what are you going to do? And here I am, and I'm enjoying the hell out of it. So, Craig, listen, for Craig to be back, good for Craig. He's incredibly good at what he does. 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. When it comes to what's going on with Marcus Stroman, though, and Steve Cohen, you're way off base. You're way off base. You don't understand that a guy like that is going to come in and change the dynamic some and go out and bring in a guy like George Springer. He's going to go out and add to the payroll. There's no doubt about that. But he's not going to go turn it into $250 and $300 million right out of the gate. Maybe they become the Dodgers here eventually with all of that. Okay? I don't think it's going to be right away. I would be stunned if he walks in the door and by opening day of 2021, the payroll's $250 million. I really would. 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. You know, we were spending a lot of time earlier discussing whether or not Sam Darnold, at this point, has been able to even show enough. And I think that when you understand everything around him and you want to make that argument, it holds water. But when you look at the bigger picture, the one thing I have just been asking for all along, is just for a guy to be able to elevate those around him to play better. That's what great quarterbacks do. And it's hard when you don't have a great offensive line, and the Jets do not have a great offensive line. But you still have to find ways to do it. And I look around the league, and it's pretty tough to watch guys like Justin Herbert and guys like Joe Burrow walk in the door and they're having the success that they are in year one. You can say they have more to work with, that's fine. 3 years, Sam is still what he has been from day one. Mark in Brooklyn, next, 98.7 ESPN. Mark, what's going on?
How you doing, Carlin?
Good, how are you?
Good. So I'm a Yankee fan, so I really don't care about the Stroman situation or anything like that. But I was listening, and it doesn't matter what the Mets pay Stroman. He's a good pitcher. They need him to round out the rotation, and they're not going to reach a salary cap. They're not going into luxury tax zone anyway, right? So who cares what they pay him? If it's $15 million, $16, $19, what's the difference?
I don't think he's that good. That's my point. I think for that kind of money and the other guys that are going to be available this offseason with what teams have done and players that have already been cut loose, let alone what could still come, I just don't think he's that good. But and I think offering him $19 million is a waste of resources.
But the resources are not going to go anywhere else anyway. They're not going up to the luxury tax.
No, that's not the point. Whether or not they're going to the luxury tax has nothing to do with where they should put the money. You want to invest your money where you're going to get the most return. Marcus Stroman is a little bit better than average. That's it. That's not looking for the best return to me. That's really not. I'm looking. Go ahead.
Let me ask you a question. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's say they want to go after Bauer or another big name. Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Do you think a guy like Bauer would come to the Mets faster now that they have like Stroman and they have other guys in the rotation that they're actually, to him, that looks like a better team?
I think Bauer would come here. I think Bauer would come here to be the true number two to DeGrom and would be happy to be the guy that is backing him up and waiting on Syndergaard to come back. I don't think it would have anything to do with Marcus Stroman. You're asking me if I would rather have, ultimately, once he's back, whether I'd rather have Bauer as a 2/3 or Stroman. That's not close.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, Mets have had an issue their whole forever that nobody wants to come to the Mets because they don't spend money and they don't get free agents. Now they're actually getting a guy. They're having a more rounded out rotation. I actually think it's a good move. I really do.
I don't think guys haven't wanted to come to the Mets because of that. I think it's because guys haven't wanted to come to the Mets because the Mets haven't been paying people.
Okay, true.
Yeah, I think ultimately the money is going to make the difference for Trevor Bauer.
Fine, but I'm saying they're seeing a different culture. Mets fans also are seeing a different culture. Now,
you haven't seen anything yet as far as a different culture. What you've seen is a guy with a much bigger checkbook come in the door, and he is going to spend more money on the team. Culture, any of that stuff, you haven't seen any of that yet. You have no idea of a winning culture or anything. When the team was what it was this year, there was no excuse for the Mets to not make the playoffs this year, even without Stroman and Syndergaard. No excuse. And they still didn't do it. So let's not talk about changing cultures and stuff like that. Yes, the goal is to change the culture. But when you say we are seeing it, Mark, we haven't seen Jack Squadouche yet.
Okay, I agree with you. But what I'm saying is it's a change of a culture where they're willing to actually spend, keep guys that they have, as opposed to just throwing them out of the garbage and everybody else signing their people.
Look, that part of it, I understand where you're coming from, Mark, and thanks for the call. If you want to say, okay, the Mets are showing free agents that they're willing to pay, that's fine. But free agents will see that immediately when they extend the kind of offer that we expect them to a guy like Springer or to a guy like Bauer. I bet you that Stroman takes the $19 million. I'll be surprised if he doesn't. I really will. And I'm not expecting to get a great return for Marcus Stroman on that $19 million. I think he's slightly better than average. And that's it. You know, I don't know if it's just getting old or just, you know, being fat or whatever, but more and more lately, I'm hurting myself so easily. I told you last week, I pulled a hamstring sleeping. Like, how do you do that? How do you pull a hamstring sleeping? I went to bed. I was great. I woke up. I had a pulled hamstring. Like, what the hell's wrong with me? All right. Maybe the three bills, you know, that I'm carrying around, maybe that has something to do with it. That's possible. So I'm getting on the Peloton bike. And, you know, I'm trying to be accountable to myself to actually do some of this, to be healthier, to be smarter, to try to just be better. And, you know, not die. So I get on the bike today. I went on it last week and I didn't notice this. But last week was the first time I was on it in roughly, I'd say 6 weeks. Get on it last week, and then again today. And today, it just starts making noises. It just starts making noises like it just came out of the basement for the first time in 12 years. Like I'm pedaling and there's... I can't even make the noise. I'm pedaling and it's just, you hear grinding. Like it's time for a Peloton tune-up. It's so demoralizing sometimes to actually try to get on these things, to do the right thing, and then... Seat squeaking. I don't know if this bike was built for 318 pounds. Probably not, big fella. Ugh. Yeah, you can go follow me there at That Guy Carlin, too, if you're on the bike. God, keep me accountable. Anyway, 800-919-3776. What has bothered me the most about the New York Jets has been, quite simply, watching a game like yesterday and seeing them frankly, quit. And when I talk about a team quitting, I'm not talking about a team just laying down and doing nothing. I'm talking about the focus in situations disappearing. I'm talking about playing a team that was exceptionally talented, that has great speed. There's no getting around how good the Chiefs are. But what bothered me is even as someone that never played the game on any sort of serious level, after PAL, didn't even play in high school. When I can tell that guys are out of position, when I can tell that a play is coming because of how the defense is lined up, and it's not like, you know, a third and 18, three-man rush, and they might run a draw. No, it's... I can look and I can see, oh, look, the Jets only have really 1.5 guys to the left side. I bet you they're going to run a jet sweep here because the Chiefs, don't know if you've seen them a lot, they tend to do that with all of the speed that they have. They run jet sweeps about 8 times a game. And there it was, just wide open for Mecole Hardman. Right after the fake punt that was run by the Kansas City Chiefs. 4th and 4 at midfield. And Andy Reid is the head coach. You always are aware. Trent Green on the broadcast said, unless there's a fake punt right here. In other words, he saw it. He saw it coming before it was coming. Those guys are not taking in a lot of practice these days because you really can't go to practice and watch like you normally would. So, you know, maybe initially you would have said that would have been something you might have seen at a Friday practice that they would have practiced. No. That's not what's going on here. It was obvious to Trent Green that's what was going to happen. It was obvious to us that at 4th and 4 at midfield with Pierre Desir, who is somebody that I think we can agree has not had a good season, that the Chiefs clearly knew was going to turn and run down the field. Turn and run down the field to help block for the return. He was halfway down the field when that gunner caught the ball and had the first down. Wait, what? What? It's bad coaching, and it's players without any sort of focus. And when you don't have any sort of focus in what you're doing, when you make those kind of mistakes and you are a veteran player, mentally you have given up. The Jets have quit. That's so clear. The Jets have quit. And there is a difference between just not trying at all and quitting by losing all focus in all situations and then just, oh, well, we tried. That's what angers me the most about losing a game like yesterday, because they're a team that the Jets should look at and say, wow, what an opportunity we have. We haven't won a game all year, and we're getting to play the best team in the NFL. The best team in the NFL. And we have decided that we're not going to play hard, that we're not going to go out there and give it everything we got. There are certain guys that are, there always are. But when there is mental focus that is consistently lost, to me, that is the definition of quitting, especially when you're a veteran. When that's the case and you want to do that, you're asking for it. And that's a tough one to hang on somebody. And I don't do it lightly. But they have. They have. They don't have a ton of respect for their coach because of how poorly they're being coached right now. Greg Williams, I mean, he can blame the offense all he wants. His defense stinks. And yeah, they're great. They got speed. His defense has stunk all year. They have. I don't want to hear about what you don't have. You know, that's always going to be the excuse with that guy. Now, when it comes to actually firing the coach, to me, it's one of two things at this point. You're either going to ride out the season to make sure that you get the number one overall pick and keep Adam Gase in place almost to ensure that, in some ways, that's him earning his money. Or you're going to fire him after this week. If they lose to the Patriots, they're really just completely shot. And let me rephrase that. They already are completely shot. But if they lose to the Patriots, who are 2-5 at a team that is shot themselves, and they don't even they're not even competitive in the game, like, what's the point? You know, if you're just going to keep him there for the rest of the year to make sure you get the number one pick, that's fine. But to me, it would either be next week or rest of the year. And they'll start doing their due diligence on head coaches, but make no mistake, Adam Gase is not going to be the head coach of this team long term. The other question is about the quarterback and if Sam Darnold's going to be the guy long term. And I have a problem believing in that when Sam just has not shown enough, continues to not show enough. I want to believe in what he has done early in his career because of the lack of talent around him. But if the Jets end up with the number one pick, Sam's gone. That's it. Sam is gone. There's no reason to talk about it anymore because Trevor Lawrence is a different level player. Let's hit Jeremy in South Amboy. Jeremy, you're next, 98.7 ESPN. What up?
Hey, what's up, Craig?
Chris, whatever.
I just have...
This is good weed you're on, brother. Hope you weren't driving. Either way... The point about Sam is quite simply that even if he goes somewhere else and blossoms, it doesn't matter if you have Trevor Lawrence. You're going to look back at that decision in 3 or 4 years and just say, what were we even thinking about? He's going to be that good. Talent evaluators expect Trevor Lawrence to be a Hall of Fame quarterback, injuries aside. Why would you ever pass up on that? You wouldn't. Unless you already had another Hall of Fame quarterback in place, you would not pass up on that. So, assuming all of that happens, we can watch the Jets the rest of the year and look for some positive things to try to build on. Hopefully, Mekhi Becton plays at a high level the rest of the year. Hopefully we get to see a lot more of Denzel Mims the rest of the year. That's why I'm watching. But the fact that in my mind they've quit is really tough to take. And I think from Sam, we've seen all we need to see. Sounds tough, but I think it's true. All right, that will do it for me. Lawrence W. Hardesty is next with ESPN New York tonight. Nikki Hartman, outstanding job, backbone of the show as usual. Tomorrow night, there's a lot going on, as you may know. If you care to avoid all of it, I will be here. It's Carlin, 98.7 ESPN. See you then.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.